This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Than we could have previously made by, say, taking genes from one animal and putting them in another. And it also allows us to make these changes much more quickly. We can create novel creatures in weeks or months, whereas, say, creating dog breeds took hundreds of years.
Yes, and you know, underlying all of this, of course, is a sort of basic question that's important to a lot of our listeners is, what rights do we have with regard to animals? What rights do animals have when we interfere with their life for our purposes? And as you've mentioned, we've been doing that probably as long as we've been species sharing this planet. So we have been trying to change animals to meet our needs or utilize animals to meet our needs. But somehow it becomes a little bit different when you're crossing the genetic barriers or you're starting to play with nature when you can, say, have a mouse with a human ear or a pig growing a human organ. Can you talk a little bit about those issues and the ways that we are actually crossing the species barrier?
Sure. Well, there are a variety of objections and concerns to meddling with animal DNA, and some of them are very practical, and those tend to be the animal welfare issues. You know, are we changing animals in a way that causes them pain and suffering? And sometimes that certainly has been the case. Scientists tried to engineer pigs that would make better pork back in the 80s, and they did that by putting a human growth hormone into pigs. It turned out to make better pork, but in the process, it created all these problems for the pigs. The pigs suffered from basically every disease you can think of. It was just devastating for their welfare. So there are concerns along those lines. Then there are also more philosophical concerns about whether doing this is unnatural and therefore wrong, whether it's arrogant, whether it's our species playing God. And these concerns tend to be independent of animal welfare. So even if the animal does just fine, some people might say it's wrong to be meddling with that biology in the first place.
And then there are other issues people bring of having animals that have been changed genetically getting into wild species mating and changing what's out there naturally.
Right. So there are also concerns for the ecosystem and the environment at large, as you mentioned, for these animals. What happens if they get loose? We don't really know how they might affect the ecosystem. And then when you're dealing with animals that are designed to be food or in some cases to produce medicine for humans, there are also concerns about human health and safety. Are these products safe to eat or to consume?
So when you were going across this, so clearly you saw some uses where the people felt very, I'm thinking about the goats with the human gene that changed the milk they produce. Talk about what motivates these changes. I mean, there are huge laboratory farms of mutant mice and other animals in being produced in the world right now. But there are also people who are working to change animals for what they really believe is the betterment of mankind and no harm to the animal. Can you talk about the goats?
Sure. So the goats are part of a new or growing field known as farming, and that's spelled with a PH. It's a combination of the word pharmaceuticals and farming. And the idea is that we can get animals to produce medicine for humans. The focus so far has been on dairy animals, cows and often goats. And so these goats, for instance, they have a human gene in their genomes, and it causes them to produce a compound known as lysozyme. That turns out to be an antimicrobial compound, and it's very concentrated naturally in human breast milk, but not so concentrated in animal milk. The idea is that perhaps you could give this lysozyme-rich goat's milk to children who aren't being breastfed or don't have access to breast milk, and perhaps it could help stave off diarrheal diseases, things like E. coli that maybe aren't a huge problem in the U.S., but are a big cause of childhood mortality in some countries around the world.
So these people are obviously thinking that they're going to help people that are suffering around the world. You know, I worry once again about if the goats do get loose and what are the long-term effects. And I know that they've studied these goats very thoroughly and through many generations, and so far there's been no harm to the animal. But it is so that some of the changed animals via either, well, there's a huge loss of animals, period, in cloning, not as successful as they would like. But also some of these other animals, they don't prove to be as hardy, I want to say, out in the wild. I know there's a big issue here with salmon. There's the fishery people saying the fish they raise are, you know, just as healthy and just as good as the wild stock. And there are the people with the wild stock who have got the studies to show, no, they are not. You're going to damage all wild salmon if you release these. We have a battle right now about releasing hatchery fish. So these kinds of issues are very real and very important.
Right. But I think one of the important things to keep in mind is that there are so many different ways to tweak DNA and so many different outcomes that it's hard to make blanket statements like this is always bad for animal health or always good for animal health. The results really vary. So these particular goats that make a lot of lysozyme actually seem to be healthier than normal goats because the antimicrobial compound protects them from getting udder infections. But, of course, that's not always the case. We can also engineer animals that do suffer. So it's really important to look at each application on a case-by-case basis.
Well, that is one of the points that you make throughout the book is that case by case is really essential. I'm Linda Olson-Osterlund, and Emily, we're now going to go to a membership break. I wanted to let people know we're in the middle of our membership drive. If you didn't know that before, you're knowing it now. And during this time, you have the opportunity to become a member of KBOO. And when you become a member when a show is on air, it lets everybody else know, I like this kind of programming. I'm calling in because I want to hear these kinds of shows. If you've liked what you've heard on A Deeper Look, this is a perfect chance to become a member. And we have in Membership Central standing by, we have Carlos and Will, two of my favorite people here at KBOO. They're going to tell you everything you need to do. You can get a copy of Emily Anthes' book, and they'll fill you in on that. But you have to dial us at 877-500-5266. And now let's go ahead and go to Carlos.
Hey, how you doing, listeners out there? We want to encourage you, as Linda said here, to become active members of KBOO by going to by picking up your phone and dialing 877-500-5266. And we've got we've bred a whole flock of highly advanced volunteers to bring you the type of programming that you're getting on a regular basis. I mean, right next to me is Will. His father was Sean Connery, and we were able to get him into the station to help pitch today. Unfortunately, his father wasn't able to make it here today, but we have Will, and he's going to help me explain to you how you can become a member of KBOO and either become a renewing member or become a brand new member of KBOO and keep this thing alive that we've got going on here with as community radio.
That is certainly true. That is certainly true. If you call us at 877-500-5266, that's 877-500-5266. You can call up, and all of our volunteers that have been recently cloned, they have two ears each. So that way they can answer the phone and take your donation. And we really appreciate your calls because this is a great show Linda's putting on. I'm a pet owner. I know a lot of our listeners are pet owners. I have three cats, two dogs, and a goat. And I don't want anybody doing any gene splicing on any of my pets. I don't know how you folks feel out there about your pets, but why don't you call us up at 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. And tell us what you think about this extremely important story that Linda's following, and you can actually get a copy of this book, Frankenstein's Cat. And I don't know, this seems like a really interesting subject to me because it's the future. It's what's going on in our future.
Yeah, all kidding aside, I mean, this is, you know, because of the type of programming that Linda's putting together today, you're going to be a lot more informed as a listener as to what's going on in your world today. So show her that you appreciate that by dialing 877-500 5266 and becoming a become a member. You can also go to kboo.fm and through the our website, you can actually become a member there. It's secure, it's safe, and easy to do. So I encourage you to do either of those. And you know, I want to hand things back off to Linda so that she can get back on with her guest.
Thank you, Carlos and Will, and thank you everyone out there listening. You know, we love that you listen, and we need your support in money as well, so please go ahead and keep making your calls. I'm Linda Olsen-Astarlin, if you have heard, and I'm speaking with Emily Anthes. She's got a master's in science writing from MIT, something I didn't know there existed, but sounds appropriate given how much research she had to do for this book. I think the last 30 pages are all notes, so if you want to go in this book to find out what she's talking about, you can. And it's easy to do. Emily, we have so little time, we can't really touch on all the different methods. You traveled a lot of different places to meet a lot of different people and see a lot of different animals being impacted. I'm wondering if you can talk about another way that we're interacting with species and talk a little bit about prosthetic development. It's not the same kind of changes, but it is something that's going on using animals both to aid particular animals, but to assist in our ability to help humans. And in this case, this can be animals that are already injured. It's not like you need to create injuries to be able to develop prosthetics.
Exactly. And these are essentially exclusively animals who have already been injured on their own. Either they have had a run-in with farm equipment, or they've had a tumor in their leg and they needed to have the leg amputated. And scientists and veterinarians and prosthetists are really finding new ways to help these animals. A lot of times, some of these creatures, which include, say, a dolphin who's missing its tail, a horse that's missing its leg, they would have been euthanized because it's just difficult for some of these creatures to survive without these body parts. But a lot of times human prosthetists are coming in and donating their nights and weekends and trying to figure out how to save these animals, how to build them artificial body parts. Sometimes this involves creating entirely new materials or new approaches to prosthetics that have never been tried in humans before, because obviously a dolphin's body or a horse's body is very different from our own. In the process, some prosthetists have ended up making discoveries that come back and help human amputees. So one of the materials they developed for the dolphin prosthetic worked so well that it's now being used in human prosthetics.
And that is something that you talk about in the book, about how humans, how we as a population tend to feel a little bit differently about using animals when there's a benefit to human health than we do about using animals when it's for their appearance only, or what can seem like more trivial experimentation. Can you talk a little bit about the attitudes of the public out there in general about how we're using animals to experiment?
Sure. One expert I talked to refers to our attitudes as being residents of what he calls the troubled middle, which I think is really apt. Most of us love animals and don't want to see animals suffer, but we also understand that in limited cases, the benefits of using animals in some ways outweighs the risks, that we don't want to see mice, for instance, killed so that we can test out new lipsticks, but if sacrificing 1,000 mice leads to a cure for cancer, most of us would sign up for that research. So it's really a complex issue, and very few people say, let's eliminate all experimentation under all circumstances. I think people do want to see lab animals treated better. They do want to see their use limited to cases where they're really necessary and there's no other way to do the work. But there's some willingness to accept limited animal experimentation.
My daughter is in an art college, and they have a class where the intersection of art and science, and they've been talking about exactly the issues we've been discussing today. And she talked about a film she saw that a young woman made who was dying from cancer, and she had learned that there were lab rats who were given her type of cancer to try out medicines. And so she monitored the life of a lab rat with cancer at the same time as she monitored her own life dying. Apparently it was a quite moving movie, and it brings up that question of why do we say we have rights of dominance over animals? I don't think you resolve that question, and I don't think you can, and I appreciate a lot how in this book you even end up with, I think, a little bit different position than I do, but that's the reality of the world. These aren't black and white. We may have some strong reactions altogether about some things, but not others, and we live in a planet with all of us. When we're talking about prosthetics and that kind of work, we're also talking about robotics. Can we get into the Defense Department? It seems to be the one who's mostly inspired about making cyborg animals or animals that they can use for surveillance or for carrying equipment of different sorts. Can you talk a little bit about that whole arena? And actually, you know, a man who's got a backyard kit for how to commandeer the brain of an insect.
Right. So DARPA, which is the research and development arm of the Pentagon, has been very interested in developing little flying drones. But it's hard to build these machines from scratch for a variety of reasons. So researchers realized that maybe they could start with insects, which of course already are able to fly and can power themselves. And if we could just figure out a way to take control of their movements and strap some surveillance equipment on them, then suddenly we would have drones and it might be a lot less work.
Okay, leave it right there, Emily. That's a perfect place to start imagining insects being drones for us. And, you know, I think about insects. I don't really like June bugs very much, so I have less sympathy for them. But we're going to talk about that again in a minute when we come back. Right now, it's ready for pledge break. You know, the way this radio station gets to bring you guests like Emily and books like this is because of your support out there. And I know you do support us. I meet you. I hear people say thank you for the show. Please take a moment right now to call in at 877-500-5266. Make your support for KABU known and get a copy of this book. I really mean it. Don't leave it on the table. It is totally fascinating from beginning to end. She doesn't duck the ethical questions. And you learn more than you would imagine is happening in experimentation. But let's go to Carlos and Will, and they can tell you about becoming a member now.
Yeah, and that book that we're talking about, Frankenstein's Cat Cuddling Up to Biotech's Brave New Beasts, is available to you if you become a brand new member or renew at a minimum pledge of $60. And that's basically 16 cents a day.
Yeah, just $5 a month, and you can get this fascinating book. I'm really glued to the show Linda's putting on today. This is just, it's so interesting and so disturbing, the idea of splicing insects with machinery. I mean, James Cameron didn't come up with that when he's doing a Terminator movie. That's weirder than the Wachowski brothers in Matrix. I mean, this is a really bizarre subject and fascinating. And you can get this book, Frankenstein's Cat, for just $60 a donation. That's $5 a month. If you call us at 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KABU. If you call us right now, you can show Linda how much you appreciate all the work she's put into this show and the terrific guest she's got on today. Isn't that right, Carlos?
Yeah, that's right. You know, call in. Be like Tim from Gresham, who just renewed his membership.
Thank you, Tim.
Or Ed, who's from Southwest Portland, who also renewed his membership. We want to thank you renewing members for making that phone call, and we'd like to encourage more members to either renew or to become brand new members. You, the listener, you're the folks who help us keep this thing going. You're the ones who allow us to be able to get out there and get the guests, the information out to everyone, so that they can hear about different things that are going on in our world that you're not going to hear anywhere else.
This is true. This is a unique source of information and news. I mean, that's one of the reasons I love KABU. Another reason I love KABU is the amazing people who work here and volunteer here, because there's so much going on. You're welcome to drop in at 20 Southeast 8th. We're easy to find. But also, if you don't have time for that, then please call us at 877 877- 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-5266. And if you call us right now, for just a $60 pledge, you can get this book, Frankenstein's Cat. And a truly just, I mean, who else is covering this subject? I haven't heard anything else about this on any of the other news organizations I check out.
Well, you know, we can thank our author, Emily Anthes, for that. Her book is really, you know, she was just on Fresh Air. Her book is really causing quite a stir because it's so interesting and yet so controversial, really. Not her book itself is controversial, but the issues she's dealing with are controversial. And you don't, I haven't met two people who come down on exactly the same way about what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. So I really want to invite you out there. Support the show. Do it right now. You know, we always have a goal for every show. They want to see each show make a certain amount of money. So it demonstrates to KBOO that we're doing our part. Help me do our part right now. I'd love to have you call us at 877-500-5266. What's our goal, Carlos?
I don't know that the goal has been updated, but I know that that we've raised over $31,000, and we're still, you know, moving towards, you know, an overall goal of, I don't remember exactly what the overall goal is. I'm
sorry. It's $99,000, I believe, you know, and it really is that 60% of all the funds raised to keep this station on the air and what they cover, since almost all of the programming is done by volunteers, is keeping the electricity going, keeping the, you know, equipment as it breaks down fixed and getting new equipment as we need it, having us be able to bring this programming to you. Your dollars make every bit of the difference. I think our whole budget is like the same as one budget for that other public radio station. For their one show of theirs costs about as much as our whole station does for the year. Yeah. That's because we really use your money well, and we base ourselves on volunteers and give the community its chance to have a say. So please, pick up the phone right now. Right now, make all the phones in the background ring. Don't leave those people sitting on their hands at all. It's 877-500-5266.
Yeah, and I want to. I just want to take this opportunity also to thank the restaurants who've donated food during our pledge drive. First of all, Marcy Bakery from located at 1625 Southeast Bybee. Civilia Thai at 4806 Southeast Stark Street, and Vita Cafe at 3024 Northeast Alberta Street. Thank you very much for your donations. That also helps us to keep this pledge drive moving and for us to maintain what we're doing here with our pledge efforts to bring in new members and to bring in renewing members to keep, you know, to keep the station alive, to keep things going, to keep programming like the one that you're listening to right now on the air.
To keep your community thriving. That's what you're doing, and that's what those businesses have done when they donated this food for us. They're donating to their community, and KBOO makes this community just a better place. It's one of the reasons I love Portland, and I know you folks out there feel the same way. So please call us at 877-500-5266.
You have just a few minutes left to do that, and there is only a limited number of the books, so be sure and get all of those phones ringing. And we'll go back to Emily. Emily, so we were right there talking about, could they use insects? Tell us about how that what that experimentation has brought forth.
So scientists have made progress in that area. They have managed to create beetles and moths that can be steered. A little bit crude, our control right now. We can make these beetles start and stop flying and turn generally to the left or to the right, but a lot more work needs to be done before the insects are ready to be used, if they're ever used out on the battlefield. But we have managed to get some remote control beetles and moths.
And, you know, I wanted to ask you, this is a funny question, but I wanted to ask you, what was the creepiest experience you had, or what creeped you out the most about any of these things, and what was the most heartwarming or heart-enriching for you of everything that you learned? So if you can touch on both of those. I will say the man that's selling home kits of how to control cockroaches, that one just reminded me too much of little boys in rural Oregon, you know, torturing little insects. It's just, I know that wasn't what he was up to. He didn't think of himself as torturing, but that one was creepy for me. So what's your creepiest thing that you ran into researching this information?
I think the cyborgs are definitely the creepiest. Even if you understand potential applications and maybe ways that these things could be used for good. They've been proposed for search and rescue missions, for instance. It's still creepy, this notion that we can take over another living creature's body. It's a strange, unnatural thing, and it's not something I've really come to terms with yet. In terms of heartwarming, I think definitely the prosthetics work. It's just such a win-win. It's these veterinarians and surgeons who are giving animals their lives back and often in the process making progress that could then help human amputees. It's really full of feel-good stories.
Yes, I can see why that would be. You know, when I look out at this whole field, I know that it's sort of like drones. You're not going to stop having drones, even if you oppose their use in military, you know, or surveillance of citizens going about their daily business. Because once that kind of technology is out of the chute, it's out of the chute. And there are so many different ways that science is out of the chute with regard to experimentation and the changes that we can make while intersecting with animals. You talk about some really important projects that are being done to help preserve wildlife and endangered species through this. So I think the ethical questions, it's like an ever-moving line. And why I think one of the reasons I think your book is so important is that we need to realize how complex that ever-moving line is and really talk about these issues.
Right, and the science is moving very fast, and I don't expect my book to be the final word on any of these issues, but what I really hope it does is get these conversations started. I think because the technology and science is moving so fast, we can't afford to turn a blind eye to these issues anymore.
Yes, I agree. Well, Emily, we're almost out of time. Would you like to tell people they ought to support KBOO and get your book?
Sure, of course. I'm a big radio listener myself, and I always support my local station, so I wholeheartedly endorse that.
Well, thank you very much, Emily Anthes, author of Frankenstein's Cat, Cuddling Up to Biotech's Brave New Beast. If you're the listener, you probably have about a minute to call in at 877-500-5266 to get a copy of this book as a thank you gift when you join KBOO. And thank you to our engineer, Rockin, to Carlos and Will in Membership Central.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland, and busy morning coming up at 10 o'clock. We've got Air Cascadia. That's just about a minute from now. We do have a programming change. Flashpoints is off for today. Instead, we'll have an installment of Law and Disorder from the Gates, the Center, that is, for Constitutional Rights, and that will be airing in just about 15 minutes from now. And then at 11 on Between the Covers, Sarah Farahat interviews Pamela Olson about her new book, Fast Times in Palestine, A Love Affair in a Homeless Homeland. And then at 11:30, it's the film show with SW Concert and Jen Chavez. But up next, it is Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. And that's coming up next on KBOO.
Tune in this Friday from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. for News and Public Affairs Day on KBOO. Speakers will include award-winning writer and activist Raj Patel, Bill McKibben of 350.org, and Amy Goodman of Democracy Now!
That motto should be the Hippocratic Oath of the media today, should be the Hippocratic Oath of us all today. We will not be silent. Democracy Now!
That's KBOO's biannual News and Public Affairs Day this Friday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. right here on KBOO Portland.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Thursday, March 28, 2013, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. Rock Bergeron is the engineer this morning. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director. And out there in the membership room, Carlos Chavez and Will are pitching for the show today, so be sure that you call in. The headlines and the interviews and the analysis that you hear on Air Cascadia could only happen with your support. This is your community radio, and without you, we don't happen at all. Get the facts, know your rights, take a stand. Coming up in this program, yesterday the Portland City Council agreed to accept the Joint Terrorism Task Force's all-purpose annual report. Nothing to report. Steve Novick was the only, the lone voice crying in the wilderness, asked about that. And basically he and Amanda Fritz were the two dissenting votes, and then the three, it was 3-5, and of course passed in a, you know, in a flourish of glory. Charlie Hales, of course, and the rest representing, an entrenched management structure that is so unaware of it, the protection and the privilege that it enjoys, that it never sees what passes for justice and democracy. In any case, so we have the Joint Terrorism Task Force reporting in that there's nothing to report. Why? Because they're secret, of course. You wouldn't want the terrorists to get wind of it, would you? And far off in Afghanistan, a world away, and in the middle of the night, villagers hide outside their homes to escape the relentless airstrikes from U.S. drones. And from the Guns Gone Wild Department, elected representatives are home on spring break, and they're hearing from angry constituents demanding tougher gun laws. We'll catch up with the National Weather Service and the alternative lunar forecast later on, if we have time. It's far more important right now to speak with Kevin Gastola with Fire Dog Lake. The issue that I had originally asked if Kevin would like to talk about is this no-fly list the ACLU in Oregon is going after the powers that be and demanding a few answers. At the same time, in Chicago, teachers are marching the streets alongside the parents and students of schools that are going to be closed, mainly in minority neighborhoods. And the teachers' union and parents as well are calling for return to the schools in September, whether they're closed or not, show up. It's a wonderful tactic. And I'm very pleased to welcome Kevin to the KBOO Airwaves. Thanks, Kevin, for being with us today.
Hello.
Hi, thanks so much for being with us. So I'm very interested in following the Chicago Public Schools story. You've been reporting consistently on that, and we've been following